This is lecture 6 of the collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Approaching the Mystery of Golgotha. Lecture 6 is entitled The Three Spiritual Preliminary Stages of the Mystery of Golgotha, given in Stuttgart, March 5th, 1914. Following up from the considerations on the fifth gospel, today we will contemplate the effect of the Christ Spirit on the development of the human being, as it was accomplished in the spiritual worlds before the mystery of Golgotha. As we do this, we must remember the fact of the two Jesus children, the Solomon boy, in whom the Zoroaster I lived, and the Nathan boy. We must look at the Nathan Jesus boy, and ask ourselves what sort of a being this boy was, in whom the I of Zoroaster later entered. To understand this being, we must go far back in the development of the earth and the human being. This being, who was active in the Nathan Jesus boy, entered a physical incarnation for the first time in Jesus of Bethlehem. Before that, it had participated in the development of humanity from within the spiritual world, but had never lived in a physical human body. It had lived along with humanity in this way through the epochs in which the human sheaths were formed, lived through the Saturn age in which the seed of the physical body was established, in the sun and the moon ages when the etheric and the astral bodies took form, and lived also through the smaller stages that repeat the great epochs of time. However, as the human eye descended in the Lemurian age into the three sheaths, this being stayed behind in the spiritual worlds as, in a manner of speaking, a part of divine human existence, and did not participate in the development of the eye in the three sheaths and its seduction by the Luciferic Ahrimanic attack. This being that stayed back in the spiritual world descended for the first time into a physical body as the Nathan Jesus boy, in order to let himself be illuminated by the Christ. The baptism by John represents the penetration of Jesus by the Christ Spirit. However, that was not the first time that part of divine human existence allowed itself to be infused with the Christ. While living in the spiritual worlds as a spiritual being, it was already capable of being penetrated repeatedly by the Son Spirit. To prepare the Christ event in the physical body, something similar was accomplished in the spiritual worlds and worked into the development of humanity. Let us look back to the Lemurian period, when the human being bound itself with its sheaths, and see how the being of the human being would have formed itself if only the forces of the cosmos with which it was connected at the time had worked on it. There was a danger at that time that the 12 cosmic forces at work on the human being might lapse into disorder. Because of this disorder, the human would have had to develop in a totally different fashion than is the case today. The senses of the human being, which were taking form back then, would have become hypersensitive under the influence of the powers about to lapse into disorder. The present-day human being can calmly take in light sensation, all perception. Under the influence of the Luciferic Ahrimanic attack, the life of the senses would have released the most powerful desires and impulses. For example, if human beings saw the color red, as would have been the primary effect of the rays of the sun, the soul, filled with desire, would have had to flee in burning pain, and with the perception of blue, the soul would have been consumed within with agony. The soul would have had to suffer terribly with every sense impression, driven from animalistic passion and desires to scorching pain and torture. Then the agonized scream of tortured humanity made its way up to that spiritual being, that being which would later incarnate in the Nathan Jesus. The scream of humanity drove this being to the Son Spirit, so that it could let itself be infused with the Christ. Through this infusion, the inner power of sense perception was made milder, and the most powerful temptation of Lucifer and Ahriman was repulsed. Because it reduced the excessively strong effect of the forces on the senses, it transformed perceptive life into a moderate passivity. Let us proceed further, into the Atlantean period. There a new danger hovered over human beings. through the luciferic Aramanic influence, the life processes, the life organs of the human were threatened. For example, the presence of food would have awakened an animalistic desire to gulp it down. The soul would have been nothing but desire. Breathing would have been especially sensitive. Bad air would have filled the human being with shuddering disgust. Everything associated with nutriment and life functions would have released a monstrous goading of sympathy and antipathy. It would have driven the soul from voracious desire to repelling disgust. And once again it was that spiritual being who turned away this danger for human beings. For a second time it let itself be infused with the Christ Spirit, and thereby rescued the human life forces, which would otherwise have lapsed into disorder. At the end of the Atlantean epoch, a third danger arose for human beings through the luciferic Aramanic influence. There was a danger that the human soul forces, thinking, feeling, and willing, would lapse into disorder, into disharmony in relation to each other, so that the three forces would no longer harmonize properly in the human soul. Glowing with passion, the human being would have followed every impulse, or, filled with fear or hate, would have flown from it without reason, having the possibility of regulating the forces. How did this spirit bring help? The spirit being bring help? It had to dive into the passion-filled human soul and become the passion itself. It had to become a dragon in order to transform the soul forces by letting itself be illuminated by the Christ Spirit for a third time. We find this spiritual happening reflected in the myths of all peoples, for example in the myths of Saint George and of the archangel Michael defeating the dragon. In post-Atlantean cultures, we see a lively awareness of the interventions of Christ accomplished in the spiritual world through that spirit being. In the Zoroaster cult, we encounter the lofty sun being, and in the Greek consciousness, an image of it appears in the Apollo service. The temple of Apollo stands by the Castalian spring, where well-prepared Greeks would go to gain counsel from Apollo, Python, who slumbers above the steamy clouds, rising from the cleft, and encircles Mount Parnassus like a serpent, is vanquished by Apollo, and in his place comes Pythia, the priestess, through whose mouth Apollo reveals his wisdom to the Greeks. From spring to autumn Apollo sojourns in his seat, and then travels north to the land of the Hyperboreans. Apollo must travel north as the spirit of the sun, while the physical sun moves to the south. We find Apollo connected with music, with playing the lyre, representing the harmonizing of the three human soul forces. And it is said of a famous man with oversized ears, King Midas, that Apollo made ass's ears grow on him as a punishment for his decision against Apollo in the musical contest between Apollo and Marsyas, because King Midas preferred Marsyas's flute to Apollo's lyre playing. Three times, therefore, before the mystery of Golgotha occurred, did Christ connect himself with humanity from within the spiritual worlds through the threefold penetration of the spiritual being that was later the Nathan Jesus boy, first in the Lemurian epoch to regulate sense experience, second at the beginning of the Atlantean period to regulate the life forces, and third at the end of the Atlantean period to regulate the soul forces. Only then, as the fourth intervention, the mystery of Golgotha was accomplished to regulate the I in its relation to the world, I being capital I. The danger for the human I, into which it was led by the temptations of Lucifer and Ahriman, was felt in advance in the Egyptian priest centers in the Greco-Roman period. Human beings felt the I approaching and sought to wrestle with the forces desiring to bring it into disorder. At that time one saw in the temples, as at many places, ceremonies somewhat like this often repeated. The priest formed a hideous misshapen object, a crocodile, spat on it, threw it to the ground, and burned it. Other priests told the people that Ra, the divinity of the sun, followed his course from east to west, and in the west he faded and fell down because he had to fight against demonic beings. Human beings felt the forces of the eye pushing outward. We encounter this in a twofold form. We see the Sibyls appear in the 7th to the 8th centuries and travel throughout the southern European countries. In these sibyls there lived something that revealed the possibility of the forming of the eye. This phenomenon, however, was connected with the elemental forces of the earth, which work in the subconscious of the soul and push themselves out in a passionate manner. In contrast to the sibyls stands the prophecy of the Hebrew people. The prophets wanted to suppress anything sibylline in their souls and to listen only to the revelations that open up to the conscious forces of the eye. Michelangelo depicts the prophets immersed in meditation, and across from them, and in contrast with them, he depicts the sibyls with elementary forces of the earth connected with wind, fire, and air. Without the mystery of Golgotha, the sibylline element would have prevailed over and suppressed the conscious eye forces. The eye would have been lost to the development of humanity. We see the Christ impulse at work as a force in the course of humanity, even without human consciousness of it, as a power that forms cultures, that forms the history of the European peoples, and that determines the shaping of Europe. On the 28th of October of the year 312, Constantine defeated Maxentius. Maxentius had consulted the sibyls and received the answer, quote, "If you bring your army out in front of the gates of Rome, you will defeat Rome's greatest enemy," unquote. Directly afterward, Maxentius had had a dream, and he followed the utterance of the sibyl in the dream. He marched out before Rome, against all reason, and against the advice and all the plans of his generals. Constantine also had a dream. He saw how, carrying the banner of Christ before him, he prevailed over his opponent, who was four times stronger. Against all human reason, the battle took place, and Constantine won, carrying the cross before his army. We can look at the historical course of humanity from 800 BCE to our own time. In the centuries before Christ, we see the deep wisdom of the Greeks rise to its highest point. In this time, humanity exhausts the last inherited powers of the gods. Then, at point zero, the mystery of Golgotha occurs and works into humanity. After the mystery of Golgotha, the stimulating powers of the Christ impulse had a different effect. They went out from different levels of the spiritual world. There's a diagram here, and at the top, going across, are the Roman numerals 1, 2, 3, and 4, and underneath each of those, underneath number 1, in connection with the year 0 to 800, we have higher spirit world. A little lower down and to the right is number 2. From 800 to 1600, we have lower spirit world. To the right and below, we have soul world, and that's between 1600 and 2400. And finally, in the lower right-hand corner, and way across from 2400, we have the physical world. Explanation of this diagram? Dividing it up, we can first grasp the time of the first 8 centuries after Christ. We saw how human reason failed in relation to the Christ impulse. He has in parentheses gnosis. And yet, how this Christ impulse had its effect in human events, Maxentius and Constantine. In the first 8 centuries, the power of the Christ impulse worked into the physical world from the highest spiritual worlds, from the upper Devakan. We find a transition, a conclusion of this period, in the works of Scotus Erigena, around 850 CE. In his system of thought, the Christ impulse still functions as a wave of power from the highest spiritual world into the physical. Then, from 800 to 1600 CE, the Christ impulse works from lower Devakan into the physical world. People seek to bring this impulse close to them in ideas and in forms of many kinds. However, thought proves to be clumsy, the efforts fruitless. Neither the Crusades nor the attempts to prove the existence of God can produce a living connection. At the transition to the next period stands the Maid of Orleans. The impulses of Christ were revealed to her soul from the spiritual worlds. Through her, they intervene in the shaping of the history of humanity. The force that asserts itself in the human being directly from the higher, from the high spiritual realms is disappearing more and more. The forces are becoming ever weaker. From 1600 CE on into our time, the Christ impulse works only from the astral world, the soul world. Hence, theology becomes increasingly more erudite and abstract. It puts the, quote, simple man from Nazareth, unquote, in the place of the cosmic divine being. our time would have progressed much deeper into materialism, would have been penetrated even more strongly by the anti-Christian element, if the forces of Christ, working from the astral world, had not still asserted themselves in a special way. In the 15th and 16th centuries, remarkable tales appeared everywhere, which were disseminated throughout Western Europe. In the most diverse places in all the countries of Europe, men came with feet covered with calluses, in wretched garb, with long flowing hair. They told of being present at the mystery of Golgotha, and of having seen Christ wander the earth. However, as he had passed by their house, they had showed him no reverence, they had offended him. Hence they were obliged, since that time, to roam about constantly without rest or peace, and to tell as penance what they once experienced, (eternal Jew). They told the whole story as if from memory. They were taken in everywhere, received by bishops and prelates. Insight into the Akashic Chronicle lived in these men, and they could do nothing throughout their lives other than appear in this way and bear witness to the Christ impulse. The rest of their consciousness was dimmed, but through the impulses from the astral world they could achieve this vision. Through these occurrences, human beings were saved from the clutches of anti-Christianity and the worst materialism. From 2400 CE on, the epoch will come in which the powers for understanding Christ will come from the earth alone, when the Christ will work on human beings from within the physical plane. However, the harbinger of what will become substantial after 2400 reaches into our time. Christ will reveal himself on the physical plane in etheric form. And so we see history unfold from one period of 800 years to the next in relation to impulses from the spiritual worlds. In my book, World and Life Views of the 19th Century, and as it is expanded in the new version called The Riddles of Philosophy, you will be able to pursue the development of human consciousness in the same periodic steps. The history of human thought life shows us that if the necessary forces for the future understanding of Christ are to be there, thinking itself must go through a transformation. Today we see the life of thinking inserted between two views, and the human being suffers from, quote, being squashed in between, unquote, and cannot find a way to get from one perspective to the other. On one side stands Haeckel, who regards only external perception as valid, and who produced a picture of reality and the world that cannot recognize the reality of thought. On the other side stands Hegel, who proceeds from thought as spiritual reality. The life and activity of thinking and truth is the active spirit, and who constructs a thought picture of the world which his contemporaries cannot recognize as reality. What thought needs is that people let it become a living reality. It is necessary to form thoughts as living beings, like the seed of a plant. Seeds can be sowed, harvested, and then used for nourishment. Through that process they stray from their real path, which is to let new plants sprout from the seed. In like manner, people have collected thought seeds in the granaries of natural science and philosophy, have piled them up and let them dry out. If it is supposed to come to new sprouting, the plant seed must, according to its nature, be sunk into an enlivening environment. Thus it is necessary to sink Hegel's thought seeds into the ground of spiritual science. There they can mature into fruit-bearing life, to the spiritual faculties of imagination, inspiration, and intuition. In the place of the categorical imperative, the I will set in motion, quote, moral imagination, unquote, from out of the power of awakened thinking. Then it will be possible to understand the coming Christ impulse from out of the earthly powers. That is the connection between the world of thought, in the philosophy of freedom, and the higher powers of knowledge arising in our soul through the paths shown by spiritual science. In connection with the coming Christ event, I have found it necessary to speak to you today about enlivening thinking for future knowledge of the Spirit. The end of Lecture 6.